evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, July 9th, 2019. President Salva Kiir apologizes to South Sudanese on the 8th anniversary of the country's independence.
Salary may be little, it does make some difference in the livelihood of the families of our civil servants. I want to sincerely apologize to you, my people, on my own behalf and on behalf of the government for those failures.
And the UN Secretary General's envoy to South Sudan has a message for South Sudanese leaders.
We have to work urgently and collaboratively so that we can have peace in the middle of November, going on to a transitional period as well.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir today has pardoned 15 inmates serving various sentences in South Sudan's main prison in Juba, addressing the South Sudanese people on the nation's 8th independence anniversary. The president also admitted the country is facing an economic crisis and apologized for his government's failure to pay the salaries of its employees on time. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Most Juba shops and offices are closed and streets are quiet as South Sudanese mark Independence Day. The government did not organize any official celebrations to commemorate the day. President Kiir was quick to defend that decision in his speech.
I believe the importance of our Independence Day is not measured by whether we observe or celebrate it, but by the value we the people of South Sudan, attach to its achievement and the huge sacrifice we have made in the course of our long struggle. I therefore salute you today on the occasion of the 8th anniversary of our hard and independence.
Kiir says financial constraints prompted the decision to halt no official celebration. Mr. Kiir encouraged all South Sudanese to embrace peace.
Peace is extremely important for our security, stability and prosperity, my fellow citizens. And I want all of us to encourage our sons and daughters to embrace and maintain the peace which the revitalized agreement has given us. The people of South Sudan have seen for themselves what war has done in our country over the long span of our liberation struggle.
2 months into the six-month extension of the pre-transition period, Siti Sama, the body responsible for monitoring implementation of the peace agreement, warned last week that the parties could miss the November deadline for wrapping up pre-transitional activities. Desta Abiche, CITISAM chairman, said the parties have yet to canton all their forces, one of the key components of the security arrangements spelt out in the peace agreement. Kiir says he is confident it will happen.
I have no doubt that with the full implementation of the revitalized agreement, security will return to South Sudan. Our economy will thrive and we will be able to better deliver services to our people, such as schools, hospitals, clean drinking water, and create jobs for the people of South Sudan.
The president says he is fully aware that citizens are angry over their difficult living conditions caused by insecurity and economic hardships, which he apologized for in today's speech.
This is further exacerbated by the failure of my government to pay salaries of our civil servants on time. However, that salary may be little, it does make some difference in the livelihood of the families of our civil servants. I want to sincerely apologize to you, my people, on my own behalf and on behalf of the government for those failures.
The release of several inmates excludes prominent peace activist Peter Beer and a businessman Kerbino Wall, both of whom were found guilty of causing chaos during the October uprising at Juba's National Security Service headquarters, known as the Blue House. Beer was sentenced to 2 years in prison and Wall was sentenced to a combined 13 years in prison for allegedly masterminding the uprising. The 15 inmates released today were detained in Juba, Wau, Yambio, and Awil. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wodo in Juba.
As South Sudanese mark their 8th Independence Day, the head of the UNMISS in South Sudan is calling on the opposition and government leaders to put aside their differences and work for peace in South Sudan. The U.S. ambassador to South Sudan says the signing of last year's peace deal is just the first step towards finding a solution to the crisis in South Sudan. Winnie Chirino has the story for VOA from Juba.
David Scherer, the special representative of the UN Secretary General in South Sudan, says the 8th anniversary is an opportunity to remember the immense suffering of South Sudan citizens caused by war which led to independence.
Sadly, independence did not end that suffering, which continued throughout the conflict that followed. However, we should recognise the positive impact the peace agreement has had over the past few months.
Shera says thousands of people are alive today because of the decline in political violence, noting scores of families are now returning home to rebuild their lives. The UNMISS boss says humanitarian agencies are reaching more communities in need, which he calls a positive sign of implementing the peace agreement. But Shera says there are still some key issues that remain unresolved, and he called on the leaders of the former warring parties to meet face-to-face to build trust and confidence among South Sudanese.
South Sudan earned its right to sovereignty on this day 8 years ago. But this hard-won sovereignty comes with the obligation of responsibility to South Sudan's citizens. Leaders need to put aside their personal interests and use the country's resources in the best interests of their people. The message from the citizens of South Sudan on this very special day is clear. Give us the peace and prosperity we fought for and deserve.
Thomas Hushek, the U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, says the signing of the peace deal and efforts to maintain the ceasefire are remarkable, but more lies ahead.
These are only the first steps towards the much bigger aspirations of the South Sudanese people and the much bigger hopes we as South Sudan's friends have for the country. On behalf of the U.S. Embassy, I extend our best wishes for the people of South Sudan on the occasion of the 8th anniversary of independence.
24-year-old Mabe Bismarck, who opened his clothes shop this morning at Jebel Market like any other day, says he's not that enthusiastic about this year's independence anniversary because, unlike in years past, people did not gather at Dr. John Garang Mausoleum to celebrate.
I'm not excited because the independence is not there. No people in the whatever, in the place where normally we've been there. But that's why you just see me just say the henna how like that. I'm not totally happy.
28-year-old Juba resident Agith Gabriel says he doesn't understand why the government didn't organize celebrations for this year's independence.
Today, independent, actually, we are not feeling excited because we are not celebrating it. But during those days, seen before crisis, we were hoping on the celebration.
Several South Sudanese commenting on social media today also wondered why the government did not organize official celebrations for the 8th independence anniversary. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makwe tells VOA's James Batty the money that would have been used to stage a huge celebration today will go towards payment of salaries of government workers and implement the pre-transitional activities.
On the occasion of the 8th anniversary of the Republic of South Sudan, His Excellency the President has directed that we should not celebrate that high profile so that we can use the resources available for the payment of salaries and for meeting any other government obligations, including the implementation of the agreement. So His Excellency the President will make a nation address, whereby he will be talking to the people of the South Sudan and the diaspora and the international community on the occasion. As for the people of South Sudan, they will have to celebrate their usual way. In addition to that, the theme for this celebration is peace, forgiveness, and unity.
Mr. Minister, people say that the reason that the government cannot pay salaries is because of the delay in the implementation of the peace process. What's the progress in the peace process?
Well, of course, the delay in the salaries, this is the main reason why the government is not celebrating the Independence Day at that level, so that we can pay the salaries, render any other services, including implementation of the agreement.
When the president talked about peace, unity, and forgiveness, do you think the people of South Sudan should believe him? Because since 2013, the government and the rebels and Riek Machar, you have been talking about peace, and nothing has happened.
Well, I don't know what is your yardstick for measuring peace and unity among the people of South Sudan. But so far, the president, in his address to the nation, will address these issues. Because without peace, there cannot be forgiveness. And without peace, there cannot be unity.
Would President Salva Kiir be willing to forgive all the other people who he accused of trying to overthrow him?
Well, for the non-signatories, he will ultimately appeal to them to join him in our quest for peace. Because peace cannot come unless all the parties who are not signatory to the agreement sign the agreement and they commit themselves to the peace process.
I know the president is going to be speaking Tuesday on the Independence Day, but give the people of South Sudan that will be listening to us this morning a hopeful sign that peace will come eventually.
Well, of course, for President Salva, he's committed to peace and he's working hard to ensure that peace prevails in South Sudan. Not him alone, but all the parties who are signatories to the agreement are doing the same, and he will work hard to ensure that all those who have not signed the agreement join President Salva Kiir Mayardit in his efforts and his endeavor to ensure that peace comes to South Sudan.
That's South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makwe speaking to my colleague James Batty from Juba. The head of ANMIS and other envoys in South Sudan are calling for direct talks between President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar to fast-track the implementation of the pre-transitional activities ahead of the formation of a transitional national unity government in November. The head of ANMIS says he and other envoys made the request Monday during a meeting with the National Pre-Transitional Committee officials in Juba. Lasuba Memo reports for VOA from Juba.
ANMIS Chief David Chiara says the parties need to work quickly to meet the November deadline for finishing pre-transitional activities. Chiara says only President Kiir and Machar, the former first vice president, can resolve the dispute over the number of states and their boundaries within the Independent Boundaries Commission, or IBC, which failed to reach agreement on the number last week.
Some of the issues around the IBC obviously have to be resolved, the unification of the military. I think those two people can help resolve some of the outstanding issues and progress issues forward, and as well build the trust that's needed. What we would prefer not to see is another extension, because on the middle of November we can actually have a unified government coming together, making decisions collectively.
Chair is calling on the parties to expedite the peace process, saying there is not a lot of time left to implement activities of the pre-transitional period.
We have to work urgently and collaboratively so that we can have peace in the middle of November, going on to a transitional period as well.
According to the peace agreement, the parties must decide during the extended pre-transitional period whether the country should have 32, 21 or 10 states based on the original map of South Sudan. If the parties cannot agree on the number of states, the agreement states the matter should be settled by referendum. Gabriel Changson Chang, deputy co-chair of the National Pre-Transitional Committee, says either the political parties reach a deal or it goes to a referendum.
The committee did not find any conclusive result, which means the issue is either to be referred to a referendum, or the five political parties to the agreement have to sit on a face-to-face meeting to try to resolve this issue.
Changson says arrangements are being made to hold face-to-face meetings between the party's political leaders.
There are arrangements that the five parties to the agreement should come together in a face-to-face meeting. Dr. Riek, President Kiir, and all the other parties, so that we find a political solution to the number of states and their boundaries, which can work until we develop those issues in a permanent constitutional making process during the transition.
On the issue of security arrangements, Changson says the government is buying food and medicines to send to cantonment sites. Not long ago, opposition government commanders reported there not being enough food for troops at cantonment sites. Changson is calling on the international community to provide financial support for security arrangements, saying even though the government may soon provide some money, funding is still a big challenge. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a UN panel of experts has a warning for the leaders of Sudan. Find out more when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you react when you fail?
I just take it easy and I pray for my chance to come again. I calm down my heart.
Well, I feel I'm down, but it gives me the strength to work harder or to get another enterprise. If I fail in some line, I achieve that one, then I look for another opportunity.
Not so bad, but I take it as a stepping stone to something bigger. So I don't cry. However, I don't rejoice as much. I just relax and then think of where I made the mistakes and other things and then push myself up.
People don't enjoy failure, but it all helps and motivates and keeps me going, because if I fail, I learn a lot from that and I don't want to repeat that. So anytime I fail, I realize and I go back and correct the mistake that I did.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and it's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about the importance of nutrition after being sick or injured. When people are recovering from an illness or injury, they often don't think of nutrition. But as VOA's Carol Pearson reports, it may be key to getting their health back.
When Monica McComb returned home from the hospital, she didn't think about nutrition as being essential for a full recovery.
I was really, really weak. You know, I could even hardly walk with the cane.
McComb didn't associate her weakness with malnutrition until she was evaluated, but researchers from Advocate Healthcare and Abbott were conducting a study to evaluate the role nutrition plays in reducing hospital admissions. Suela Sulo, a researcher from Abbott, says malnutrition is rarely taken into account in dealing with patients who are in recovery.
Malnutrition is invisible to the eye, and therefore it remains underdiagnosed and undertreated.
McComb enrolled in a home health care program and was given a detailed nutrition plan. Most Americans have access to food, but one in three patients in home health care is malnourished or has some nutritional deficiency that puts his or her health and recovery at risk. Katie Riley is the chief nursing officer with Advocate Aurora Health.
Nutrition is not the primary reason why patients usually come to home health. However, it is important for us to pay attention to the nutrition to promote their strength and get them recovered quicker.
Abbott funded the study and partnered with Advocate Healthcare to find a way to reduce hospitalizations, cut medical costs, and promote patients' health. Suela Sulo said the researchers found that when patients on home health care received education about nutrition along with nutritional drinks, they were nearly 20% less likely to be hospitalized or rehospitalized in the 90 days after an injury or illness.
Through identifying the patients at malnutrition risk, feeding them with the right nutritional drinks, you are increasing their chances of recovering faster, not going back to the hospital, or not going to the hospital in the first place.
One of the study's goals was to create a program that patients could follow on their own, one reason they were educated about nutrition. Gretchen Vanderbosch says anyone can become malnourished and not realize it. She says educating patients about nutrition is so important.
Because they're educated, they actually continue their supplements and start it back up, and their outcome is so much improved. They have more strength, they heal quicker, they have less falls, they have less readmissions.
The researchers say they hope other healthcare programs and hospitals can use the study to help other patients as well. As for Monica McComb, she says she feels stronger and has more energy than she had at the start of the program. She credits support from the home health nurse and the focus on nutrition for her improved health. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
UN human rights experts say Sudan must end what the UN calls horrific legacy of violence, abuse, and respect the rights of its people if it wishes to achieve a peaceful and stable society. A senior UN official has provided an update on the situation in Sudan to the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights Andrew Gilmore says he is encouraged by the agreement reached Friday between Sudan's Forces for Freedom and Change and the Transitional Military Council. He praises the African Union and Ethiopia for mediating the preliminary power-sharing deal between Sudan's civilian opposition and military junta. But he says it will take a lot of perseverance and genuine commitment to make the deal work after months of violent protests, which finally succeeded in toppling longtime President Omar al-Bashir on April 11th.
Following the removal of President al-Bashir from office, the High Commissioner underscored that the crisis in Sudan has its roots in human rights grievances, unfulfilled economic, social, civil, and political rights, and that, therefore, the solution must also be grounded in human rights.
Unfortunately, Gilmore notes, the removal of Bashir did not end violence or abuse in the country. He says more than 100 peaceful protesters were killed by security forces on June 6th. He says civilians opposed to continued military rule have been subject to widespread human rights violations and violent repression of protests.
We encourage all parties in Sudan to continue to resolve any outstanding issues through dialogue. OHCHR welcomes that the agreement reached last week includes a commitment to conduct an independent investigation into the violence perpetrated against peaceful protesters. It's important that investigations contribute to justice and dignity for all victims of such violence.
Osama Humedo of Sudan's Ministry of Justice says the Transitional Military Council is committed to upholding all human rights mechanisms. He speaks through an interpreter.
Sudan is living through a genuine change towards transition of power as a result of an inspiring popular revolution that imposed new facts on the ground. In this new era, Sudan looks forward to the cooperation and support of the international community in order to overcome the challenges it faces in all fields.
Humeda says Sudan is changing its ways, so it is time that unilateral coercive sanctions on his country be lifted. He also urges nations to cancel Sudan's crippling foreign debt. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we turn to Australia, where a scheme that gives temporary visas to migrants from the South Pacific is depriving island nations of some of their most productive workers. The program began last year and is designed to address chronic labor shortages in parts of Australia. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
In 1949, Australia held its first ceremony for new citizens. It would be almost 25 years before a policy that discriminated against non-white migrants gave way to multiculturalism. More than a quarter of the population was born overseas, making Australia one of the world's most culturally diverse places. But with three levels of government, local, state and federal, it has plenty of laws, and that can be a minefield for newcomers. Mona Ibrahim, an art instructor in Sydney, says in some countries weapons are routinely carried, but not in Australia.
It's normal overseas to have that in your pocket. It's even recommended for your safety. But here we are learning a new concept for safety. You are already safe. If you are not safe, you just call the police.
High school students are making animated films to help new settlers, especially those from non-English speaking countries, understand Australia. It's part of a crime prevention project called New Home, New Laws. Brima Touré is a migrant from Sierra Leone.
Where we come from, there are different ways to avoid crimes, and one of it is bribing. You know, bribing a police officer or bribing a teacher for you to get good marks. That's why we put it on the screen there that it's in Australia, it's a crime.
The program is supported by Rob Lindsay, a retired school teacher, who says young migrants can easily find themselves in trouble.
In some cases, you might be pulled over by the police and the police issue an on-the-spot fine, which is paid and goes directly into the policeman's pocket. Well, that doesn't really work here. And I can see young people getting themselves into all sorts of difficulties just because they didn't understand things like that. Whereas in other places, it's just the way the system works.
Australian immigration is dominated by new settlers from India and China. There is opposition to multiculturalism in some quarters, but most Australians believe diversity has given their nation great strength. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with Bosmic singing about the independence of South Sudan.
Nina Biseli Rabu na Asani Bihafisu Res Salva Kiir. Salva Kiir wakifolena oyal taina. Nina bitaramu ita o nina bihibita.
Bosmic the original. God bless my people. God bless Southern Sudan. General Republic crew. One love.
Bye 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 Jalaba. Bye bye.
Listening to Bosmic Nile Republic Crew with the song Bye Bye Ya Jalava. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We appreciate you making our show part of your evening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Estima, 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 estima